National Service.
Conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we are, the 15th day of July, 2014. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go if you want to find access to the chat room. It's free, it's easy, membership, access, all of that. Just jump right in and join us in the good time that we have every evening. Folks wandering by now, John and Sparky are in the room with me there, and more folks will be coming by as time progresses. We're not one of those punctuality-driven type A kind of chat room groups. We're just not. You'll also find it headonradionetwork.com, the pop-out player, which is really easy if you're just sitting by your PC. Of course, if you're listening on some sort of smart device, Android, iDevice, whatever, we recommend the apps from Stitcher or TuneIn. They both work equally well, with the gentle reminder that should you happen to see some obnoxious ad while using said apps, please remember, we are not in any wise compensated. We just produce the programming and they benefit from it by disseminating it to others. We don't get any of the ad money. That goes all to somebody. Well, I have no idea who it goes to. Anyway, we don't benefit from the advertising on those apps. If you get the full pay version, you get it without the ads, I do believe. Now, what else? Well, of course, at headonradionetwork.com, you will find the ever-present, inescapable PayPal button. That's how we keep all of this going. That's how we keep this little effort at independent conversation radio going for, lo, these many, many, many years. I started this February 2nd, 2004. So we're over 10 years old. And just slightly less so in the internet-only format. But it's through listener contributions that we have kept all of this going. And I heartily encourage you to participate in the funding of the program with either the PayPal button or the traditional mail address, which you will find on the contribute page at headonradionetwork.com, with a gentle reminder that checks and money orders should never, ever, 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 ever be made payable to Bob Kincaid. They should, in fact, be made payable to The Horn or Head On Communications, something like that. And why is that? It's because I never see them. Boss Man Wayne takes care of the bill paying for The Horn, and that allows me to, you know, do this instead of tearing my hair out. Because there are always bills due. And it gets worse instead of better when we end in a hole on any given evening. And that's where we found ourselves yesterday. I performed a little experiment, not mentioning fundraising, and watching absolutely nothing happen all night long with the exception of the kind contribution from Glenn. Thank you, Glenn. And this evening, we find ourselves having to deal with not our typical $150 fundraising goal, but rather $260. because that was the deficit we were left, minus the fact that Asa, our buddy in Vancouver, got us started this evening. So there is $260 to go. Thank you, Asa, and thank you, Glenn. $260 to go. One would hope that 26 folks are out there with the 10 bucks to help keep this going for everybody else. Remember, this is not a business. This is not some sort of capitalist profit-making enterprise. We're trying to keep a conversation going that has been going, and to do so in such a way that everybody has access to everything that everybody else has. We're not trying to create a tiered system of supremacy or economic superiority. We don't charge for the podcast. We don't charge for access to the 24/7 stream. We don't charge for access to the live stream. We don't charge. And that's about as not capitalist as you can get. It's about as not profit-driven as you can get. But it does take a minimum amount of money every month to get it done, and that's today we find ourselves needing 26 folks to contribute 10 bucks apiece. You can always use PayPal and just send it to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. And choose personal and gift, or something like that, because, well, that way the transfer fee won't be pulled out. Or you can just use the PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com. It's fine either way. But that's how we keep all of this going. And when we don't do that, that's how all of this doesn't go. So there you have it. That's the nature of the beast here, and that's the fundraising ask for the evening. I'll update as need be, and hopefully I can update and say, hey, look, we not only did get out of yesterday's hole, we took care of today, and we took care of tomorrow, too. Because, see, we're going to have at least 3 days of unhot mic next week that I cannot avoid. And that's going to put us in a deep, deep hole, a $450 hole. So there's that. All right, then. Let us get started. This, of course, like I said, the 15th day of July, 2014. And it is, in fact, Titanic Tuesday. Titanic Tuesday is so named on account of a remark made by one of those 952nd tier right-wing blithering idiots that dominate and populate the airwaves all across this here America. And this particular right-wing blithering idiot operated out of Beckley, West Virginia, America's fifth smallest radio market. And, well, he got a call, and he had this little right-wing. Our buddy Jim was the one who heard this and shared it to our grand hilarity one evening. One of his little mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking, non-brain-using right-wing, repig-licking, bircher, deather, tenther, booger-eater, libertarian, repig-licking followers called one day and said, Steve, how come is it that they is clam fossils in the rock stratas of West Virginia Mountains, huh? And ever confident of his own Titanic intellect, the guy replied, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates. And thus was born Titanic Tuesday, in which we celebrate the absolutely titanic intellect that attends the right-wing idea machine. Mm-hmm. Now, there's still no word on the movement of the Titanic butter plate, but we're waiting. But this is Titanic Tuesday on the horn. And hoo-wee, mother. It's not often that we get to actually make reference to, because, of course, in Titanic Tuesday, what the moron, because it is kind of a carryover from Moran Monday, what the moron was trying to get at was that the tectonic plates had shifted, and there's some truth in that, movement of the tectonic plates and uplift created the Appalachian mountain chain, which had once upon a time, back millions and millions of years ago, good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christians are quite sure that the Earth was not even in existence, you know, because it's only 6,000 years old. But billions of years ago, this whole area was a nice, flat, shallow sea into which all kinds of plant matter fell. And I guess occasionally a little bit of shellfish here and there. But mostly a lot of palm fronds. You know, you can go into coal mines and you can see the imprint of palm fronds. Or ferns, really. Not palms, ferns. Giant tree-like ferns of the Carboniferous period. They're still to be seen. Their imprint from millions of years past in a low-oxygen, shallow swamp. Low oxygen. Kind of like the right-wing world, isn't it? But anyway, it isn't often that we get to talk about the movement of Titanic plates on Titanic Tuesday in their original form, which was the movement of tectonic plates. And this isn't really entirely that, I understand. You don't need to tweet at me or Facebook over me. You'll understand what I'm talking about when I get there. Now, it was, a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, that Senator Ted Cruz, son of Raphael, oh, really? Thank you, Sylvia. Time out. We'll know something here in just a moment. Damn. Okay, stand by, please. All righty, then. I am told by Truth Seeker and Lottie in the chat room that I am now actually streaming. Here's what had happened. My good friend and colleague, Rick Smith, had not turned off his streaming, his streamer, and thus it was overriding this one. But that has since been rectified. So now I'm kind of at sixes and sevens. Because this means that the fundraising pitch that I made at the beginning of the program is not going to go out to anyone except the podcast folks. Ah, and now Randy's telling me loud and clear on iTunes. And thank you, Sylvia, for being the first one to say, hey, where the hell's Bob? Thank you very much. I need that because I don't have any way of actually monitoring whether or not I'm streaming here. I know that sounds crazy, but it's the nature of the beast. All right, so let's do the Reader's Digest condensed version of this. We ended the program last night with a $130 deficit. ASA was, it was not a $150 deficit last night because Glenn, in my little experiment to see what would happen if I did not mention the odious job of fundraising, Glenn just jumped in and took us from 150 to 120, or 150 to 130. Without even anything being said to him. And that's where it stood for the remainder of the evening. So we started 280 in the hole, and ASA got us started this evening before anything was even said, so that we're only 260 in the hole. So that's where fundraising stands. And as I said before, we really can't afford holes at this point in time because I'm going to be gone for 3 days next week. It's unavoidable. And that's gonna put us in a hell of a bind in any way you slice it. So there we are. We are now $255 to go for fundraising this evening. Thank you very kindly, Sal. Sal is there. He is dependable and right there day in and day out. Thank you, Sal. Thank you so kindly. Thank you, Asa, and thank you, Glenn, from last night. It is, as I noted, Titanic Tuesday on the horn, and as I noted, and for you for podcast listeners, I'm sorry, I just have to do this again. This is Titanic Tuesday, and it's not every day that one gets a chance to work in tectonic movements with Titanic Tuesday, in which we celebrate the intellect of the Titanic intellect of the right wing. But tonight we do. You might remember Texas Senator Ted Cruz, son of Rafael Cruz. You tell Rafael that, yeah, right, that Rafael. The guy who even when he speaks without a microphone, he's got reverb on his voice. Now, this is the guy who took a jug of Crisco and anointed his son, the senator's head, to be king of America. King of you, king of me, you know, bow the knee, kiss the ring, all of that sickening, anachronistic, monarchical crap. Well, Ted Cruz has an idea. And, of course, whenever Ted Cruz has an idea, grab your wallet and your loved ones and just try to get to a safe place. This was about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. Ted Cruz announced that all of that public land out there, just sitting around doing nothing, well, he wants to sell it. No, really. Dumb bastard wants to sell all kinds of... all kinds of publicly held lands. Because, you know, who needs national parks anyway? I know this sounds like something from The Onion, but it isn't. It is something from the maggoty brains of the birther, bagger, deather, tenther, booger-eater, libertarian, bircher, repiglican mind. The sort of Borgian hive mind. There's our obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening. Think Progress had the story on July 10th, 5 days ago. The story arises because Ted Cruz, son of Raphael, anointed king of America. Jesus, that just makes me sick every time I say it. This guy wants to be the most Christian and pious king of America. The video's out there. You can watch the anointing and the laying on of hands. These people really do despise constitutional self-government. So over in the Senate, there's this otherwise innocuous-seeming bill. It's S-2363. And it's called the Bipartisan Sportsmen's Act. Never mind what that does, that bill. Senator Ted Cruz, jeebus. Senator Ted Cruz, I'm sorry, King-in-Waiting Ted Cruz. You know, there was a time once upon a time when, 2,000 years ago, or a little more than 2,000 years ago, 2014, 2018, 2058 years ago, when a charge that somebody wanted to be king could prove actually not good for one's continued well-being. Even showing up in a pair of red leather boots could get the charge levied against you and get a lot of people head up about, you know, you want to be a king? No, sorry. Be king of hell, you know, that kind of thing. So while the right wing hollers about, our Kenyan overlord, and they put things on their cars like Obama is the Antichrist. And they, oh, by the way, we know that the teabaggers are in full outrage mode because some bagger, birther, deather, tenther, booger eater, bircher, libertarian, re-pig licking, what have you, went to a red brick building that was rumored to be a place that was going to house children trying to flee the hell on earth that we have helped create in Central America. And in big old letters, they spray painted, "No illegals here. No undocumented Democrats." See how it works? Yeah. Here's how we know it was teabaggers. Come on, really? I got to explain this. Of course I do, because it's fun. And I have to talk about it because it's radio and I can't show you a picture. Illegals is spelled I-L-L-E-A-G-L-E-S. Yes. No sick predatory raptors here. No illegals. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, they are in the full flower of their dudgeon. Is that even, that's word salad, isn't it? So anyway, S-2363 is the Bipartisan Sportsman's Act, and Senator Ted Cruz, king-in-waiting of you and me, really, the right wing would have to cut my head off before I would ever bow. There is not a king on earth I will bow to. No. Mm-mm. Kneeling, sorry, don't do it. Just, I despise the idea of royalty. But anyway, he filed his little old amendment. Amen. You know, maybe we should market some amendments. Little like kind of like Altoids, but we would have the word amen printed in them. I bet we could sell them to the religion industry and the teabaggers and the birthers and the tenthers and the deathers and the booger eaters. I bet we couldn't keep them in stock. Amendments! Mm-hmm. And they could have little fights amongst themselves when they opened up a new 10 of them. I want to be the First Amendment. Screw you. I don't care if you get the First Amendment. I want the Second Amendment. And nobody would ever want the amendment that gives women folk the right to vote. Or from whence arises the right to privacy. What right to privacy? Never, how, Bob, do the story. So here's the skinny. Back in 1802, when Thomas Jefferson purchased at roughly 2 cents per acre the territory then known as Louisiana, which stretched from the Gulf of Mexico to the, well, Puget Sound and the Columbia River Basin. It was all just called Louisiana. And as I noted, what, last night, he wrote at one point in time that, "I think we have land for the expansion of our republic unto the 1,000th generation." The biggest city, I think, in that area at the time was New Orleans. The second largest was St. Louis, and I don't think there was a third largest, because there wasn't a third. But they were bought by the federal government as an extension of the will of the people thereof. And so it is that even unto this day, 20% of the entire United States is what is referred to as federal land. If you take a few states like Nevada, Utah, Idaho, Oregon, and Alaska, over 50% of those states are federal land. Now, a lot of those federal lands are national parks, visited by people who want to see unspoiled wilderness, that kind of thing. Well, the amendment to S-2363, the Bipartisan Sportsman's Act, is an amendment that would compel the federal government to put for sale signs on federal lands. The specific operation of the amendment would be to forbid the federal government to own more than 50% of the land in any given state. And again, that would open up for private sale big hunks of Nevada, Utah, Idaho, Oregon, and Alaska. And when we talk about sale, we're not talking about some sort of homestead act. We're not talking about some situation in which, oh, maybe a family fleeing horrible, mind-bending violence in Honduras, where we supported a coup a few years ago. We're not going to let them come up and buy a little homestead tract in Utah. No. No, the only people interested in buying these federal lands are, come on, this is easy, extraction industries, frackers, drillers, blasters, miners. Yeah. Don't you love that? Then, for instance, maybe the government would have to knuckle under further to Cloven Bundy out there in Bundyville and sell him, you know, maybe at the original purchase price of 2 cents per acre. Then again, was Nevada part? No, Nevada was part of the Gadsden purchase, not the Louisiana purchase, right? Yeah. Guess what? This is not a case of Ted Cruz, son of Raphael, man with reverb in throat, out there doing something crazy all by himself. There are at least 15 members of the United States Senate who agree with this concept. I suspect there are more if you can figure out for sure that there are some sort of hydrocarbons under that ground. Then, the next thing you know, we'll hear from third way Joe Manchin saying, what we need is a balanced approach to selling America off to people who want to poison other people. We need balance. Yeah. So anyway, this is what's past is prologue. Did you know that out in Yellowstone National Park, several portions and several popular, very popular with tourists and visitors areas of Yellowstone are presently closed to the public? Why? Well, you can't drive to them safely right now because the roads are melting. And that's not one personal opinion of somebody who took some really whopping good acid and is watching paisley skies and melting and melting flora and fauna. Oh, wow, they're melting. No, the roads are really melting because in the last few years or so, there are parts of Yellowstone that have risen, you know, pushing up, tectonic plates, that kind of stuff, have risen as much as a foot. Been pushed up. And because of the extreme heat that attends our changing climate, even in places like Yellowstone National Park, the sun is beating down on the asphalt roadways, while at the same time, the heat from underneath the earth is cooking it from the bottom. It'll be just, and that means the roads are nice and hot and gooey like a brownie fresh out of the oven on the inside. And you wouldn't want to be driving the family truckster out to an attraction in Yellowstone and all of a sudden having Clark Griswold hollering, "We're sinking like at the La Brea Tar Pits." Al Nash is a spokesman at the Yellowstone National Park, and he wanted to tell people, there are plenty of other great places to see thermal features in the park. I wouldn't risk personal injury to see these during this temporary closure. And now, by the way, no reopening date has been set as of the date of this particular story. It was dated 3 days ago. But here's the fun part. The reason that all of this happens is that Yellowstone is a very geologically, volcanologically busy place. The whole reason you've got all the geysers there and the bubbling thermal hot springs and all of that stuff is because Yellowstone is a super volcano. Not just some pissant volcano. Not like, Vesuvius that wiped out an entire resort city of the Roman Empire in August of 79 of the common current era. It's a super volcano. It's a great, humongous, big volcano. And it hasn't blown for, 750,000 years? But it remains an active supervolcano. It gets kind of earthquakey out in Yellowstone. The land has risen because it's been pushed up from underneath, and it gets pushed up a little more all the time. Yeah. Big fun, huh? But like I said, it's not every day that we get to talk about tectonic movements on Titanic Tuesday, which is a play on the idiocy of the right wing and tectonic stuff, which they thought was Titanic. So I can't think, what, was it yesterday that I saw a story that in one day Oklahoma became the earthquake capital of the United States? Good old Oklahoma that just doesn't have earthquake activity, or at least didn't, until some wise ass decided it would be a good idea to start putting the subsurface of the crust under massive pressure from hydraulic fracturing because money, because stupid, because money will make you stupid, or the love or want or incessant desire for money will make you stupid. Hey, Joe Bob, yeah, fracking you're doing is turning Oklahoma into an earthquake zone. Yeah, but look at all this money. Irish Dave noting, that supervolcano is exceptional because Wyoming. Irish Dave also wanted to know, amen, Mints, which is the one about quartering soldiers? It ain't that kind of quartering, Dave, damn it. So that's where we find ourselves starting. And I want to extend a big thank you to Kate and to Robert, who have jumped in alongside Sal and Asa today and Glenn yesterday such that our fundraising goal is now $185. Thank you, one and all. $185 is a lot easier to reach than $260 was. So, oh, can we round up? Can we say 19 people at $10 a piece or two at 95? That's as far as I can go with it. But yeah, 19 folks at $10 a piece, and we're okay for the evening, and we're okay for fundraising going into tomorrow. Bills, 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 bills. Do you have any idea what the hourly rate is on a cabana boy? Have you, really, have you priced spinning rims for a Bentley? Yeah, I didn't think so. And you don't want to know what it costs to tank up a Gulfstream 5. Hell, the hangar rent alone. So, yeah, we've got stuff to, we got bills to pay. Now, what else? As if fracking, say, a super volcano. Because you know, I mean, we're talking about people who, if their brains were gas, wouldn't have enough to fill up a piss ant's motorcycle and run it halfway around a BB. You know, if a fracker could possibly get a half a chance at fracking into a super volcano, oh, cool! Because they have a sickness of the heart for which gold is the only remedy. Yeah, that sickness has been with them. There are some of us who just have that sickness, and it's reached the... it's not an acute sickness. It's what the medical community would call chronic. It never goes away. It just stays with you, that sickness of the heart that can only be remedied by gold. So we have that on this Titanic Tuesday as a starting point. It is by no means an ending point. And we have miles to go, as Robert Frost would have said, before we sleep. Miles to go, indeed. It is about 19 minutes before the hour, and again, we had sort of a fits and starts beginning to this Titanic Tuesday program. I hope folks didn't just run away. I hope, you know what? When they heard Rick Smith playing there for the first 13 or 14 minutes of the hour, I hope folks just listened, because Rick is freaking awesome. If you're not downloading his podcast or listening live between the hours of 3 and 6, you're really missing out. Just like you're missing out if you're not downloading Dr. Bill O'Brien or listening live to him. Great heavenly days. Where on earth are you going to find a discussion, a genial discussion, of what Thomas Jefferson actually meant when he was talking about about inalienable rights, and what he meant when he used the word in its specific 18th century context, happiness, in the preamble to the Declaration of Independence. I hesitate to say I'm begging you, but I kind of am. These last several weeks of Dr. Bill O'Brien's program have been absolutely brilliant. For instance, did you know that when Thomas Jefferson wrote inalienable in the Declaration of Independence, he was actually sending sort of a coded message to the southern states that this was not a reference to property? Inalienable, because see, if any right winger, especially that David Barton creep, wall builders, he pals around with the Beckerhead. To hear the right wing talk about it, all the Declaration of Independence means with that that language in the preamble is that the only way you can be happy is if you've got property. And the only way a Southerner could be happy is if his property was of dark skin and a human being producing more property. But it doesn't mean that at all. But that's what they teach out there. Children, little children's ice cream mandrake, children are taught that the life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness is about property. When property was specifically left out. Only with Dr. Bill will you get someone explaining that Jefferson in France even said to Lafayette in regard to their own Declaration of Independence, take out property. Property cannot be the source of happiness. And it was a discussion Dr. Bill and I had about the fact that alienability refers to real property. You know, land, or anything one owns. You know, if you've got a boat, you can sell the boat. You've then alienated the property. You've made it the property of an other person. You can alienate land. You can alienate the minerals from the land. You can alienate, you get the idea. You can alienate the surface from the subsurface. So when Thomas Jefferson says, inalienable rights that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, what he is saying is, none of these are property. And the pursuit of happiness cannot be a pursuit of property or the ownership of property because it is inalienable. And all property is alienable, therefore it is not property. You try to get that out of David Barton. You try to explain that to a dead from the neck up like David Gregory. You see my meaning? And it's all there for free. Maybe, makes me wonder, maybe we should charge for Dr. Bill. Because if you give away knowledge for free, well, hell, that can't be much knowledge. They ain't charging nothing for it. You see my meaning? Yeah. But anyway, that was a bit of a digression. So it is indeed Titanic Tuesday on the Horn, and as I said, we have Titanic Intellect O Plenty, and we will be marching through it as the evening proceeds. Let's see if we can find just a nice little start in place. Let's see, weirdo right-wingers? Guess what? They're still burned up about a bunch of little children wanting to come to America. And it was last week that we had the audio of the weirdos up in, what was it, Vasectomy, Michigan or somewhere? Castoria, or I forget where. Wolverines! Who were all head up and wanted to build a minefield around their town to keep them filthy little alien children out. See, for instance, when we refer to human beings as aliens, implicit in that is the fact that they are property. Oh! Anyway, the Detroit News has the story. There's apparently in Michigan an outfit called Michiganders for Immigration Control and Enforcement. And they went on a march. Oh yes, Lord, they went a marching. And they went a marching to defend America. It's over there at DetroitNews.com. Possible housing of Central American children meets with protest in small Michigan town. Here's a goober in a cowboy hat with a sign on cardboard painted in hot pink. Seal border. Apparently, they want to put up a fence or something around America to keep seals out. Oh no, I'm sorry. Okay, syntax. He wants to seal the border. He's going for that sort of haiku Zen-esque statement. Seal border. Oh, I'm sorry. It wasn't Vasectomy, Michigan. It was Vassar, Michigan. About 50 demonstrators, according to the Detroit News, went a marching through town. They marched a whole mile from City Hall to a social services facility that the Detroit News reports would shelter little children who are undocumented immigrants. There's about 50 of the booger-eating, bagger, deather, tenther, deather, bircher, libertarian types. And they said, and Tamara Murray, the same woman who said she wanted a minefield, said, "We must act. We must save America and stand up against this invasion." My Michigan accent isn't very good. When I was just a little hillbilly, starting my first year of high school, our Latin teacher had retired, and we had a brand new one, and she had come to us from East Lansing, Michigan, the home of Michigan State University, where she had been a Latin major, and she was one of my very favorite teachers. But all us little hillbillies and rednecks and whatnot had never heard nobody talk quite like her. Seemed like every word she said came right out through her nose. We quickly were given to understand that that was the way people spoke in Michigan. And we loved her just the same. But yes, Tamara Murray of Blumfield Township near Saginaw says it's time to act. We don't know what it means, what she means by that. Maybe she wants to dig the minefield herself, but she wants to save America and stand up against an invasion by children. You know, you would think this was the children's crusade straight out of the Middle Ages. It isn't. But we've already been all over all of that. But there's way too much detail in there for a deather, tenther, birther, booger eater, bircher, libertarian type. They're mad at the Pioneer Work and Learn Center, we might recall, where up to 120 children could be housed until they can be given a fair trial and either provided asylum under the law that was signed into effect by dim leader George W. Bush. 120 little children scared to death, thousands of miles away from mommy and daddy, but also thousands of miles away from the gang warfare that was likely to take their lives anyway, can await a fair trial, which will likely wind up in them being sent back to the hellhole we helped create in Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador. Oh, every time I hear El Salvador, I think of nuns murdered on their knees, and I think of the glorious, patriotic Saint Ronnie Reagan, who helped make that possible. This execution-style slaying brought to you by Ronnie Reagan and Morning in America. Actually, the minors would be between 12 and 17 years old, and they'd be there for up to 4 weeks until they got their fair trial and got sent back. It wasn't just the guy carrying the seal border sign. There was another sign that said, "Go home! We're full!" Another sign said, "No gang members! No tourists!" A building contractor from Linden, Michigan, said, "We the people are standing up and saying we will not allow illegal immigration." Wolverines! Which, you know, is particularly appropriate in Michigan, being as how that's what they call their football team anyway. They say it a lot. Yeah. By the way, just in case you were wondering, the 50 demonstrators were accompanied by at least two people carrying semi-automatic rifles of the, roughly the same type that was used to chop children into pieces at Sandy Hook Elementary in Newtown, Connecticut. And, of course, it wouldn't be a booger-eater march if they weren't carrying their "Don't read on me" Gadsden flags. I'm so proud of our country. Tamara Murray said, "The council kept this plan a secret." Right. And, of course, the Republican member of Congress for the district, a woman by the name of Candace Miller, sent a letter off to that one in our White House, that Kenyan Muslim hater of white people and anti-colonialist tendency, not Christian, Muslim, Islamo-fascist Obama. And she said, "I want to know whether local and state officials have been informed about the effort to relocate Central American children in Michigan communities, including vasectomy, every Vassar." The only problem is the children aren't being relocated. They're being housed. Perhaps we could use the phrase warehoused at that facility in Vassar until, as noted, they can be packed up and shipped off back to the hell holes from which they came. And if you are familiar with this program, you know I have a deep and abiding respect and love for that area of this continent that is commonly referred to as Central America, Guatemala. What would be the ancient pronunciation? Catemalan. And the country known as Honduras, and the country known as El Salvador. There is much good that has come up out of that area. There and in the adjoining area of Mexico is where some really enterprising human beings, really curious human beings, really, really smart human beings first took a grass. Well, you can look it up online. They took a grass called teosinte. And I think teo maybe means it's some root word meaning God. I don't know. I could be wrong. But they saw this grass called teosinte, and somebody looked at it and realized, hey, this stuff has potential. And if we gather the seeds and we replant the seeds of the ones that get these really big little nuggets of grain on them, great things could happen. And it only took 10,000 years of concerted effort for those people. How many generations in 10,000 years? It only took about 10,000 years, if I recall correctly, for that process that goes from an humble-looking piece of grass, stalk of grass, to be turned into what now grows all over Middle America and is in fields that have been sprayed with Roundup herbicide, and we call it maize. You call it Roundup Ready Number 2 Field Grade Corn, from which we make high fructose corn syrup and maltodextrin, which will burn your freaking pancreas up faster than you can say pancreatitis. Rots your liver too. What a bonus! No, I have real respect. It's in those highlands. It's in those highlands that the Mayan, the brilliant, brilliant Mayan culture first arose. It is in those highlands from whence come those children who are the direct lineal descendants of these brilliant cultures. It is from those highlands that we get not just maize, you call it corn, not just maize, but zero. Go ahead, get your scratch paper out. Use your I's and your IVs and your IXs and your Vs and your Xs and your Ls and your Cs and your Ms, and do you some long division. Do it without a zero. Please, I'll wait. I'll be able to hear the frustrated screaming from here. Such are the people who, building pyramids, temples, observation posts, this is where they worship their heathen gods. This is also where they tried to get up above the treetops and the howler monkeys and so forth so that they could actually see the sky and contemplate the nature of the universe and the changing of the seasons and develop a calendar that was more accurate and more advanced than anything developed by any white European. And come up with zero. So that you could have a nice, convenient, workable, base 10 mathematical system. Yeah, really. You know, the Greeks commonly get credit for developing the concept of pi, but if you look at the orientation and the measurements, for instance, of the Great Pyramid of the Sun at Teotihuacan, northeast of northeast of Tenochtitlan, which is now Mexico City, you'll find that somebody laying out that there pyramid had a pretty good handle on the concept of pi. But we can't go giving those heathens credit for any of that now, can we? I guess one of my bucket list thingies is just going to have to go by the wayside. Because I have this really, really powerful memory, and I remember being a child on a boring, boring, boring Sunday afternoon after church, plopped down in front of the television set and seeing some sort of ABC special about the Aztecs. And just gaping in wonder at the pyramids and the carvings. And ever since that moment, I've badly wanted to see it. I guess that ain't gonna happen. Because I guess it's just way too damn dangerous to go down there and do that right now. To call Copan. Oh, mercy. Piedras Negras. Palenque. Places that had magnificent civilizations when white Europeans were still scrapping around with the buzzards for what the wolves didn't want. And those are the children. The children are the next generation of those people who have so long survived in that cultural milieu. And Tamara Murphy, well, she don't want them there, them dirty little savages. I despise them. Luda, with a poignant offering. I wish my people had said that to them when they first illegally immigrated here. Papers, please. We don't have the resources to put you on welfare. Oh, well, what could have been? But maybe that's why they don't want any more immigration, because they're scared the same thing will happen to them that they did to my folk. It's exactly what's going to happen. And they can stand there, these little right-wing booger-eating, birther, deather, tenther, libertarian, bircher Republicans. They can stand there and command the tide not to come ashore. Tide coming anyway. Because it is in the nature of humanity. The second largest city on the planet right now is populated by people with some portion of the blood of the defenders of Tenochtitlan. In 1521, it was the largest city on the planet, populated entirely by people with indigenous blood. I'm not romanticizing. These are simply facts. And it is a demographic, unassailable fact that really, really pale people like me are going to become a minority in this country because that's the way the population works. That's the way population dynamics work. But all these terrified birther, deather, tenther, booger eater, bircher, libertarian types up in Vassar, Michigan, they're scared they're not going to be as white as they always was. And them 12 to 17-year-old Guatemalans, well, they're going to come here and well, there he was, a-rutting on my Mayella. They fear the future, and yet the future comes just the same. It will be a matter of justice when these continents have been reclaimed by the people who owned these continents, if you can use the term ownership, because it really didn't occur in their mindset worldview, who owned these continents in the first place. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay looking down the road and maybe seeing a time when all this cranky-ass borderer Scots-Irish that Agnes and I have perpetuated on the planet gets a little bit jumbled and mixed up with cultures that have been here for 30,000 years. I'm okay with that. I think it's going to be kind of exciting. Kind of beautiful. Kind of the ultimate, because that's what this is. There was no way that white Europe could ever send enough white folks over here to, as hard as they tried, to make whiteness a permanent majority here. It could not be done. It had to happen sooner or later. And it started happening pretty much right off the bat. Humans are going to interrelate. It's just going to happen because we're humans. Yes, Randy, in answer to your question, didn't South American cultures also give us potatoes? You betcha. And most of us only know one form of potato. And now, in the last 10, 15 years, you begin to see a few different varieties. There are 1,000 different varieties of potatoes in the highlands of coastal South America, Ecuador, Bolivia, Peru, Chile. And they're all yummy. I'd love to try that stew. Now, I've heard it. It's an acquired taste. Maybe I wouldn't like it. There's a stew. This is the food porn portion of the program. There's a stew they make of llama and maize and potatoes that have been set out to dry in the sun and freeze in the cold night air and dry again and freeze, and they are freeze-dried. And they're yummy. I always wanted to try chicha, too. That's the corn beer. It's up there on my list with the drunk-making Oakley. query coming in from Ron in Raleigh. Bob, we often use the Kenyan Muslim socialist with anti-colonialist tendencies description. What I want to know is, why would anti-colonial be looked upon as a pejorative? Shouldn't we all be anti-colonial? We should. But you have to remember that appellation was appended to Barack Obama by none other than amateur paleontologist Newton Leroy Gingrich. And we cannot simply ignore him. All right. And what he's referring to is the fact that Barack Obama's father, and it's dog whistling, okay? Barack Obama's father is a Kenyan, and they opposed the occupation by the British, who was just teaching them how to be properly Christian and civilized. Right? Irish Dave, that's exactly what I'm saying. Jesus, Bob, you're not saying money can buy happiness, but can't buy happiness, but can buy property. I'm exactly saying that. Yeah. Yes, indeed. Oh, so we got weirdos. We got titanic intellects to celebrate here on the Horn. Oh, yes, we do. They're marching in Vassar, Michigan to save America from a 12-year-old Mayan. And I can't help but remember a story from years and years and years ago. You can search it out. It came out of the judicial system of Tennessee Stan. An undocumented immigrant mother, I can't remember the particulars, but she had her children taken from her custody. And the judge told her, and I think, if I recall correctly, through a Spanish interpreter, that she would have to, by God, learn English if she's going to be in America and wanted her children back. And the woman, the interpreter kept saying this to the woman in Spanish, and the woman kept looking at her like, what the, huh? What? What? I don't know, Your Honor. I keep giving her this. It was like something out of a Far Side cartoon. You know the one with the dolphins poking their head out of the tank in the lab, and the lab-coated scientist standing by the blackboard, and one of the scientists says to the other, "We think they use language, but they just keep making these habla español noises at us." I keep telling her that habla español, Your Honor, and she just looks at me like I got six heads. Well, it turned out there was a little problem. The woman was, in fact, from rural Mexico or one of the Central American nations. And you could as easily have been, as opposed to screaming Spanish at her, you could have just as easily been screaming English or Arabic or Hebrew or Pashtun or Russian, because it all made about the same sense to her because she didn't speak any of them. She spoke one of the dialects of Mayan. But we're not exactly sharp enough to have picked up on that little fact. Nothing she said sounded like Spanish. That's because it wasn't. Canjobalan, Yucatec, Mamean, Quichean, Tzeltalan, none of which are Spanish. We got no freaking clue. Because learn English. It's the language of America. Shinka, Lenka. Most of us don't even know. You know, okay, for those of you who just enjoy the hell out of internet radio, here's a fun thing to do. Go learn the names of some of the many Mesoamerican languages. Start looking on a search engine, and you will find streaming internet radio in a whole bunch of different Mesoamerican languages, and you can sit there and listen to it. And you might, and you won't probably understand a blessed word. Go to YouTube and look at look up learning Nahautl, Nahautl language. I think the Spanish referred to that as that most unlovely tongue. But in the instance of Quiche, it was a most unlovely tongue that had a freaking zero. Yeah. But remember, we don't want those kind of people around here. Well, they'll probably come up and embrace that their common core, and next thing you know, we'll have another number we'll have to learn with. We got enough numbers. Wolverines! See how it works? Yeah. So we'll take a little break. Green News Report is on the way. Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. I always enjoy it, because this here is Tuesday, the 15th of July, 2014. And ruminate on that just a little bit. Maybe we can conversate on it later in the program. You know the number, 304-574-8178. 304-574-8178. We can ruminate on what it means to really be American. Because see, and I can say this, my white folks been here for a while, longer than a lot, not as long as some, but a while. And when we first got here, you know what we were? Well, yes, fans of Joe Bajant, may he rest in peace. God, how we miss him. We were borderers, but we were also colonists. You know what we still are? We're still colonists. I'll go to break in a minute, but just to tell you how my weird little mind works. I got kind of curious about, because I said last night, the only reason the United States military is not in Central America putting down these drug cartels, because we have a long history of it, C.F. Smedley Butler, who did the dirty business of United Fruit in Nicaragua, I believe, and I think may have even gotten a Congressional Medal of Honor for it, realized he'd been doing the dirty business of corporate America, and that was back at the beginning of the 20th century and inspired him to write a book called War is a Racket. Realized he'd been an enforcer, not a defender of freedom. But I got to thinking, because I said last night, the only reason we're not in Central America right now is they don't have anything we want. To wit, hydrocarbons, coal, oil, gas. And I started to think, and this led me down a little garden path. The military maintains something called the Defense Language Institute. And there they do a pretty fine job of teaching other languages to specialists in the military who will then go and put it to good use. Just as a for instance, I graduated high school with a young man who joined the Air Force and went off to the Defense Language Institute, and I forget what language he learned. Our buddy Matt Osborne from Osborne, Inc., OSBORNEINK.com, is a veteran of the first Gulf War, and he went to the Defense Language Institute and became an Arabic specialist. But there is a laundry list of languages they teach there. I mean, they teach four different kinds. They teach modern standard Arabic, Egyptian Arabic, Syrian Arabic, Iraqi Arabic, Farsi, Pashtun, Hebrew, Coptic. They teach several different dialects of Chinese, Japanese, Tagalog, Korean. They teach French, Russian, German. Oddly enough, they don't teach English. No, stop that, Bob. They teach just about every language on earth. But you know what I did not find? You know what I did not find in the list? And it struck me as a little bit funny. They do not teach Quiche, which is a Mayan tongue and a predominant one. And they do not teach Quechua, which is a predominant South American Andean language. Of course, we all remember the story of the heroic Navajo code talkers, the last one of whom recently died, whose language was so absolutely incomprehensible to the Japanese that they had not a chance of figuring out what was being said during World War II. There are magnificent languages to be learned. Anishinaabe, which I have had the honor of hearing, is a beautifully difficult musical tongue. Nahuatl. I don't think you pronounce the L. Nahuatl. Otomi. Purimpecha. Quiche. On and on and on. But the military does not have a Defense Language Institute class in it yet because they haven't decided they have a need for it yet. By the way, just a little reminder, if you remember the administration of Dim Leader, we did have some Arabic speakers in the military, and we badly, badly needed them when Dim Leader decided to attack the people of Iraq, who had not done a damn thing to the people of the United States. He tried to kill my daddy. But we drummed them out of the military because we didn't like the way they loved. No, really. The military mission was not as important as whether or not the Arab linguists were gay. Whew-wee! God bless America. Anyway, I've been filibustering long enough. We'll open up the phone lines, 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178. Green News Report is on the way, and we are still waiting at $185 to get through the rest of the fundraising hole for this evening. Any help is awesome help. There's no such thing as little help. It's all help. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. This is Conversation Radio. I'm Bob Kincaid, and I have a really, really crappy old computer that doesn't know if it wants to play the bumper music or not. Jesus, this gets frustrating. Anyway, we'll be back in a few. This is the horn. No, I don't want that. Well, maybe the media player knew better than I did. There. Yeah. Tuesday, July 15, 2014.
One of the most urgent changes needed in the world.
Huge Christian organization divests from fossil fuels. Germany pledges $1 billion to International Climate Fund. Step aside, Formula One racing. All-electric Formula E is on your tail. Plus...
Of course, we're all environmentalists. We all want clean air. But...
Rupert Murdoch's really big butt.
All of those big butts and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Because you don't believe in climate change at all. You made a comment.
Just a minute. I believe in climate change.
No,
shut up.
Yeah, shut up. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, just a minute. So, Rupert Murdoch's really big butt?
Yes, surprise. It turns out that billionaire Rupert Murdoch, the man whose media empire is a primary source of global warming disinformation in the English-speaking world, yeah, it turns out he's a climate science denier.
Climate change has been going on as long as the planet is here. Things are happening, but how much are we doing? with emissions and so on. In terms of the world's temperature going up, the most alarmist things have said maybe 3%, 3 cents, three degrees centigrade in 100 years. At the very most, one of those would come from man-made. We can't mitigate that. We can't stop it. We just got to stop building glass houses on seashores.
Yeah, so, you know, climate change isn't really a problem. And if it is, then we're just going to move everything. That's what he says.
There's nothing we can do about it. He says a 6-inch rise in the seas, well, that would knock out the Maldives. That's it. That's all we have to worry about.
Yeah, who cares about them?
And the city of Miami, and the city of Norfolk, and most of Bangladesh, and, of course, all the droughts and floods and heat and tornadoes and hurricanes. But never mind all of that. We'll adjust.
Yeah, we'll just deal with it. Now, Murdoch's vast propaganda campaign is having real consequences. After a nasty campaign across Murdoch media outlets in Australia, Australia's Conservative Prime Minister Tony Abbott is poised to repeal that nation's landmark carbon tax. And remember, back in 2010, a leaked email from a top Fox News executive ordered the network's journalists to always cast doubt on the global scientific consensus on human-caused climate change.
Of course they did. And just to continue connecting the climate change dots here, Rupert Murdoch and his entire network denying climate science, it has nothing to do with anything except for his interest and those lucky few who happen to own stock in the most profitable industry in the history of mankind, in their ability to continue making those enormous profits. That's all this is about. It's all it has ever been about.
But some good news. In spite of this international propaganda campaign to deny global warming, action is still moving forward. The World Council of Churches has announced it will divest from fossil fuel companies. The World Council of Churches represents 500 million Christians worldwide. Chancellor Mark Oakley of St. Paul's Cathedral in London quoted the former Archbishop of Canterbury in saying, "This is a matter of justice for the poor."
We find ourselves, after all, on a fragile globe where the rich world is disproportionately contributing to climate change and the poor world is disproportionately suffering the consequences.
The World Council of Churches is the latest to join the international divestment campaign headed up by activist group 350.org. It's modeled on the successful anti-apartheid divestment movement of the 1980s. And more action at interim United Nations climate treaty negotiations in Berlin. This week, German Chancellor Angela Merkel has pledged Germany will give $1 billion to the UN's new Green Climate Fund, which leverages public and private investments to help poor nations fund projects to develop clean energy, reduce emissions, and adapt to global warming.
$1 billion.
Indeed. Finally, move over Formula One racing and make way for Formula E. Formula E are all-electric race cars with backers like British billionaire Richard Branson and actor Leonardo DiCaprio. They hope it will overtake their louder, polluting cousins. After a test race at a track in England last week, the all-electric cars won over the director of racing operations for the Andretti Autosport team, who said, "It's like the Jetsons. This is how the future was supposed to be when I was a little kid."
Yeah, and they're really cool. Check out the video at our website on that and much more at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download us anytime via Stitcher, iTunes, or TuneIn. You can and should find us and follow us on the Facebook and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Because you don't believe in climate change at all. You made a comment.
Just a minute.
Never worries about his line.
Or a doggone thing. He's just a bang-beat, bell-ringing, big paw, great skull, neck-a-nut, and lip-roaring every time a bullseye salesman. That's Professor Harold Hill.
He's a great, but he doesn't know the territory.
Just a minute.
I love that. Thank you, Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen, for the Green News Report each and every Tuesday and Thursday. It's a refreshing little segment. I can't imagine why this isn't running on for-profit media, terrestrial radio stations all over America. Oh, wait, I can't imagine. I know who owns them. Anyway, this is the Horn, Titanic Tuesday, the 15th of July, 2014, and some housekeeping to keep up with out of the break there. First of all, that story about divestment. Now, I'm not gonna pour cold water on anybody's celebration, but with things like that, we always have to bear in mind that there's more to it than meets the eye. For instance, let's say we get all of the shareholders and people of conscience to divest from companies that do business in, say, mountaintop removal or fracking, or are invested in TransCanada or anybody associated with Keystone XL or ExxonMobil or Royal Dutch Shell or BP or, you know, any of these Chevron, any of these predatory thug corporations that are trying to make the planet uninhabitable for human beings. Well, let's just say that. And our first impulse is to say, you know, a little golf clap. Yay, hooray, we're proud of you. You did a moral and ethical thing. But every coin has two sides. And sometimes the other side is equal and compelling. It's not like 97% of scientists say climate change is real, and there are three well-paid idiots from the American Petroleum Institute who say, no, it ain't. Not like that. What if I told you that most hydrofracking and a hell of a lot of coal is not, the investment firms are not publicly traded on the stock market? Because you can divest till hell freezes over, but that's a divestment from publicly traded stock corporations in which, say, pension funds are invested. Well, guess what you've done by divesting from those publicly traded corporations? You've run more money over into the hedge funds that are who are answerable to absolutely no damn body at all. You can protest, you can march, you can blow your vuvuzelas, you can holler, hey, ho, hedge fund bastards got to go. You can say, what does democracy look like? This is what democracy looks like. Outside hedge fund offices all damn day long, and it doesn't matter a damn. Just saying. Bear that in mind. Because it's true. It is factual. Another thing. Another note coming through. A note from Jessica. Regarding last night. Subject line. Request. Please thank Jim. In the name of all my maternal relatives, please thank Jim for his righteous indignation for the Holocaust school project you shared last night. Like slavery, the Holocaust should be off limits for such discussion of did this happen or not. Both events do not need to be foxified, and it is criminal that a school system allowed this project to take place. It speaks volumes to the state of dysfunction of the United States educational systems in place, a very dangerous slippery slope. Indeed, indeed. So, Jim, Jessica and others. In fact, Granny T from Tennessee sent along a note last night thanking you for your indignation. What else? This. No sooner do I wrap up a little bit of a micro rant, and you may recall last night in my conversation with Jim when he was asking, you know, do people not know about the Holocaust? And I said, you know, what percentage of Americans know about the genocide of 20 million or more indigenous peoples subsequent to 1492? Yeah, I'd hazard it's less than 5% of the people in this country. God, I get tired. You know, it just hangs over there in the studio. And I hate it when I have to put it on because it's warm enough in the studio as it is, you know, the Horn solar furnace or the Horn studio sauna. Thank you, Janie. But the moth-eaten old purple velvet wizard robe with the tattered appliqued moons and stars all over it, and there's a little shelf that's got my magic eight ball with the cracked glass plate in the bottom and the answer stuck on answer hazy, ask again later. And I hate it when I have to put it, take it down and put it on, which I'm doing right now. Because it's hot. And it kind of smells of mothballs, even though it's moth-eaten. But here we go. Not only do we have a whole bunch of World War II Holocaust deniers in the United States, but over at, well, the video is posted over at Americans Against the Tea Party, posted by K.L. Nelson. Let's go to some audio. Now, I don't know what he's still doing on for-profit TV. Well, of course I do. We're talking about Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. But Dinesh D'Souza is, I guess, waiting sentencing on the election fraud that he perpetrated. Remember, he fronted money for people to turn around to give to his old college pal who was running for Senate in New York against Kirsten Gillibrand? Yeah, that. He got busted. Stone cold busted. This, of course, was after he'd been out on tour touting traditional marriage between one man and one woman while he was busy having sex with one woman while he was differently married to a different other woman. That Dinesh D'Souza. So let's go to the audio, shall we? Do let's.
Breaking tonight, new developments on a major storm moving up the East Coast and new political fallout for our exclusive interview with domestic terrorist Bill Ayers.
Oh, shut up, Megan. Okay. This just came in, but let's, okay, blah, 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 blah. Okay, there's Dinesh. Come on. Here we go.
Presidents to start off with who are, you know, our commanders in chief who sign laws, bills into law and abide by, not in all circumstances, but are expected to abide by the rule of law, something that you have often flouted in your own history.
No, but both of those presidents were actually responding to movements that didn't always abide by the rule
of
law.
That's Bill Ayers.
I mean, the civil rights movement, the black freedom movement, broke the law consistently, and that was part of the strength and beauty of it. And the black freedom movement grew and evolved every minute, every day.
Did you know that Bill Ayers wears earrings in both ears? Mm-hmm. He does. No Merkin does that. So let's check in with Dinesh D'Souza, because he's going to tell us what Bill Ayers really meant.
Spirit. So the American founders, far from being status quo guys, broke the law themselves, the law of the British Crown, and established a revolutionary country.
I love that. The American founders, far from being status quo guys. Oh, it's time for the Clockwork Orange treatment for Dinesh D'Souza. He'll just kind of jack his little eyelids open and immobilize his head noggin and strap him down with the duct tape and just make him listen to Dr. Bill until he understands what really happened in America. Not status quo guys. A bunch of them were slave owners. How much more status quo can you get? Oh, the Titanic intellect.
Based upon principles of equality.
No, stop it. Based upon print. Well, you know, equality for people who were white and male and owned property. Yeah, that kind of equality. Okay, this may be a little broken up. I'm going to try to shut up and let him get through one little hallucinatory babble.
And established a revolutionary country based upon principles of equality, based upon principles of Christianity, and principles of commerce.
Oh, you filthy freaking liar! Principles of Christianity. This nation is in no wise predicated upon the Christian religion or any other religion. Treaty of Tripoli, what? 1800 what? Treaty of Tripoli.
Now, if you look at the reform movements in America, John Brown, for example, was powerfully motivated by Christianity. The abolitionist movement is impossible if it wasn't for Christianity. Martin Luther King says, I'm submitting a promissory note. Well, who wrote a promissory note? Not the Southern segregationists. It was Thomas Jefferson. So a Virginia slaveholder wrote the charter that Martin Luther King relied on 200 years later to have a civil rights movement in the first place. So the point is that you couldn't have radicalism. The radicalism itself is parasitic upon the principles of 1776.
Okay. Martin Luther King was a parasite. Radicalism is parasitic upon the principles of 1776. Bullshit, he said to Robin, and he turned and walked away. Hmm. I really do. I prescribe a heavy dosage of Dr. Bill for Dinesh D'Souza. Maybe we'll send him CDs of it in prison.
You say that the terrorists who bombed the Pentagon in our past thought that they were doing good because America was bad, and you turn out to be referring not to the 9/11 Al Qaeda terrorists, but to Professor Ayer's group, the Weather Underground. And this goes back to the means. That you get in your head that America is bad and it needs to be changed, and you pursue any means necessary to evoke that change. Dinesh equates you to actual terrorists who bombed us on 9/11.
Even in Dinesh's response to you, he pointed out that the American Revolution was violent and it was illegal. So you're not always against illegal violence. You're only against it when you think it's against the things you believe in.
Oh, I think Bill Ayers landed a body blow on Megyn Kelly. Right. She's only opposed to the violence she doesn't support. I think he just called her a hypocrite in a very nice, really smart person way, didn't he? But wait, that's not what we're here for.
But the reality is we were never terrorists, and Dinesh does call our group terrorists, and it's not true. Because terrorism, even if you take Webster's definition, it's force and coercion intended to spread fear and panic to make your point, and it often involves killing civilians. We never killed anyone. We did noisy, loud, very open destruction of property at a time when 6,000 people a week were being murdered by our government. 6,000 a week.
That's what you were objecting to in Vietnam.
Objecting.
We'll get to that. We'll get to the Weather Underground in a segment. So I just wanted the viewers to know we're going to talk about that in a separate segment. But that's what Professor Ayers believes, that as many other radicals in our country's history, he believed that the ends did justify the means, and that if you want to change the things about America to which you object and you try through peaceful means and you do not get anywhere, then what recourse do you have but to...
Isn't it interesting that there's no mention here of the open carry goobers and the concealed carry goobers and the goobers in vasectomy or Vassar, Michigan goobers? Yeah. No ill eagles here. No, they're peaceful, peace-loving American patriots who would never engage in violence until they do.
Push the envelope and in some circumstances break the law.
Well, first of all, there was a big difference between, let's say, Martin Luther King breaking the law and Bill Ayers breaking the law, because Martin Luther King broke the law nonviolently. Martin Luther King's point was, if I break the law, I should accept the penalty for breaking the law. I shouldn't go hiding from the law. I should go to prison because the law is unjust. So I'm going to call the law into question morally and try to sway the American people because I believe in the goodness of the American people. If you look at the rhetoric, Bill Ayers represents, I would call it the spirit of 1968. And this was the radical spirit that saw America as a force for evil, saw Vietnam as a metaphor for how bad America was, and then went right back into American history and reinterpreted American history as a series of crimes visited upon the Native Americans, the African Americans, the Mexicans. So this became a kind of anti-Americanism that was fostered in America. And
notice how the Native Americans are not Americans. It's an anti-Americanism. You got that? Maybe we need to go. Let's make sure everybody hears him before he heads to prison. Nah, who are we kidding? He's not going to prison. Prison's for other people.
I to sway the American people because I believe in the goodness of the American people. If you look at the rhetoric, Bill Ayers represents, I would call it the spirit of 1968. And this was the radical spirit that saw America as a force for evil, saw Vietnam as a metaphor for how bad America was, and then went right back into American history and reinterpreted American history as a series of crimes.
What does he mean, reinterpreted American history? Is there an interpretation of American history that says that the brutalities meted out upon the indigenous peoples here was a good thing? Actually, yes, there is. More on that in a minute. Seriously.
visited upon different, the Native Americans, the African Americans, the Mexicans. So this became a kind of anti-Americanism that was fostered in America, and it became pervasive in our schools, our colleges. It's now part of the media.
Do you admit
so
that?
Our culture has been shaped by this.
You don't admit that?
No, I think it's interesting. First of all, both of you are acting like the ends justify the means is absolutely from Mars, but when your ends are in question, like invading Iraq, you're all for it. You're all in, and that's the ends justify. That's a violent end. But on this question of the spirit of 68, we went back and reinterpreted history, and you act as if the reinterpretation of history was some kind of fiction. We did commit genocide against the Native Americans.
Actually,
we did enslave people for 250 years. And the question, could you be a moral person and own slaves, I think is something that you dodge. And so what I would say is, look, what I would say is, you need to look at the thing honestly, and don't be so afraid of the fact that we did terrible, terrible things in our history, and in order to get right with the world, we have to repair those injuries.
Ahead,
but we should.
But the critical part there is, he said, we did commit genocide against the Native Americans, and Dinesh D'Souza interjects, no, he didn't. What kind of dead, I don't like to use the word soul, but what kind of dead beingness must one have to deny the Native American genocide? Upwards of 20 million human beings, and it went on for centuries. For centuries. Kidnappings, enslavement, disease, outright murder perpetrated by the Spanish, the Portuguese, the English, the Dutch, the French. To a certain extent, even the Russians, although they tended just to stay close to the coastline and not really mix that much. The only ones you really can't indict for this are the Norse, because they hopped, skipped, and jumped from Scandinavia to Iceland, to Greenland, to what they called Vinland, ran into people that they called Skraelings, and they were a pre-gunpowder culture, remember, and the Skraelings handed them their ass, and they left. Nope, not worth it. We'll go back to eating seal eyeballs in Greenland. This is denialism. And Bill Ayers is right. Why are you so afraid of acknowledging the history of this country? Well, they're so afraid of acknowledging the history of this country because if we acknowledge the actual history of this country, a history that is soaked in blood and where the blood flows up to kneecap levels, then the entire right-wing narrative of the rightness and goodness of America crumbles into those shifting blood-soaked sands. We've had moments of good. And in the moments of good, even those have been tinged with some nastiness. At the same time Lincoln was trying to preserve the Union, he was also giving the A-OK to hanging Lakota people who had objected to having their land stolen from them in Minnesota. Philip Sheridan, the Union general who worked to such tremendous effect against the treason-committing Southerners, stayed in the military and went on out west, where he famously once said, "The only good Indian is a dead Indian." I remember a long time ago taking a leak on his statue somewhere in an Ohio night. Just seemed like the right thing to do at the time. Probably part of my misspent youth. And then, of course, there's Colonel Chivington and the Sand Creek Massacre. Sand Creek, Colorado. Who, upon being informed that the native camp that they were planning to attack was full of women and children, and having one of his subordinates ask him, "What shall we do about the women and children?" Colonel Chivington replied, "Kill them. Nits make lice." We, of course, see that in operation today. I don't know why these Gadsden flag-carrying goobers don't call themselves the Chivington Brigade up in, say, Vassar, Michigan. Because clearly they think that little children whose genetic forebears have been here for 30,000 years are vermin. Remember, they said, "Well, they may have dengue fever or Ebola or something." So there it is. I mentioned non-knowledge of the Native American genocide last night, and bang, right there it is, Dinesh D'Souza. Oh, there's more. Dear God, there's more. And it's along the same lines, because we are actually talking about the titanic intellect of the right wing. The next story takes us out to Arizona Stan. Or I think, as Irish Dave referred to it, Anglo-Zona. Our buddy the Angry Indian pointing out, Dinesh D'Souza is a freak and a hypocritical conservative colonial arse-kisser. Well, that seems to narrow it down nicely. I think this boils down to the evening's first official duct tape and hockey puck warning. Yeah. Oh, give me a minute here. Somehow or another, I got bounced out of the chat room because this tired old computer decided to stop cooperating. We're about 4 minutes from 8 p.m., 4 minutes from the close of the second hour and the beginning of the third of this Titanic Tuesday. And, by the way, fundraising for the evening still stands where it was standing the last time I mentioned it. $185 to go to finish fundraising for the evening so as not to be in a big old giant asshole tomorrow. That will be a humdinger. Okay, I'm back in the chat room. I think. No, we have to go to Arizona for this. There are, charter schools have proliferated across this country like toxic toadstools after a warm spring rain. And according to Americans United for Separation of Church and State, who really work hard to make sure that they get their facts straight, because the right wing plays so fast and loose with them anyway, Heritage Academy, a charter school in Arizona, is using textbooks authored by a freak who, if you are listening, and he is mercifully now a dead freak, using textbooks authored by a dead right-wing freak, who if you're a listener to Dr. Bill, you've already heard about, creepy old man named Cleon Skousen. Sounds like something you put in some sort of acidic preparation on to clear up. Yeah, here, rub this acidic cream on your Skousen, it'll go away in a couple of days. The Heritage Academy, in an attempt to teach American history and history generally, is using two books. Remember, taxpayer funds are used to prop up a little right-wing indoctrination factory like the Heritage Academy. The two books are called The 5,000-Year Leap and The Making of America. These are used as textbooks, and children have to learn stuff in them in order to pass classes. This passage can be found in one of the textbooks. Like I said, duct tape, hockey puck. These are the writings of Cleon Skousen. He was a radical Mormon John Bircher. How's that for a toxic cocktail? If African American children ran naked, it was generally from choice. And when the white boys had to put on shoes and go away to school, they were likely to envy the freedom of their colored playmates.
What, Edith, huh?
We're talking about slave children. These things are not presented as historical documents, as salon notes. Principal and founder, Earl Taylor. Hey, Earl! Says, our purpose is not to convert students to different religious views. It is to show them that religion influenced what the founders did. Charter school. Religion, taxpayer money, separation of church and state, establishment clause. Phooey! The First Amendment is nothing but a life support system for the religion industry. And is there any doubt left of that as fact? Here, let's check in with some of the other fun stringing togethers of words espoused by Cleon Skousen. Once upon a time, Skousen reviewed a book by Carol Quigley called Tragedy and Hope. Here's what he wrote, scrawled. Power from any source tends to create an appetite for additional power. It was almost inevitable that the super rich would one day aspire to control not only their own wealth, but the wealth of the whole world. That's the quote from the book by Carol Quigley, Tragedy and Hope. As I see it, the great contribution which Dr. Carol Quigley unintentionally made was to help the ordinary American people realize the utter contempt which the network leaders have for ordinary people. Human beings are treated en masse as helpless puppets on an international chessboard where giants of economic and political power subject them to wars, revolutions, civil strife, confiscation, subversion, indoctrination, manipulation, and outright deception as it suits their fancy and their concocted schemes for world domination. He was one of those constitutional originalists. Back in the 70s, when the Mormons were being deeply criticized for their persistently held belief that people of dark skin were not quite human enough to be admitted to the ordinance of the Mormon priesthood and get the special underwears. Well, Cleon Skousen then took up his crayon and scrawled out an article called "The Communist Attack on the Mormons," in which he said that people who were criticizing Mormons for thinking that black people were subhuman were distorting the religious tenet of the church regarding the Negro and blowing it up to ridiculous proportions. He then went on to call them communist dupes. Mm-hmm. That's the guy who wrote the textbooks that are being taught to children with the aid of taxpayer dollars. Ain't it beautiful? I thought that would fit nicely with our discussion of Holocaust denial and genocide denial, Native genocide denial. It's an industry. And this rotten old man managed to live on the planet and help screw it up for 92 years. He also wrote a book called The Naked Communist. One wonders if he wrote it with only one hand. He was another one of those border jumpers, by the way. He was born in Raymond, Alberta, Canada. And then they just crossed the border and came down to live in the Mormon colony, they came down to live in California. After that, in 1926, he border jumped to the Mormon colony at Colonia Juarez, Mexico, and lived there for 2 years helping his grandma. And then he jumped the border again and came back to California, where he had no problem attending San Bernardino Valley Junior College, and then getting a law degree from George Washington University Law School. Because, you know, he was the right kind of border jumper. For pity's sakes. Yeah, that was what I was going for with the voice, Devin. Get off! Devin sent me a note on Skype. Get off my lawn, whippersnapper! Precisely. Oh, and by the way, during the Green News Report, I got a note from our good friend Dr. Allen down with the Waco Friends of Peace in Waco, Texas, who afforded me such an eye-opening, culturally broadening visit to that region last fall. Alan notes, "I'm very glad to see that people are finding satisfaction with the Affordable Care Act, and I do give President Obama credit for that. It isn't single payer like we want, but at least it's a start." So I look at it. He continues, and this is based on something I said the other day, "I know you feel don't try this at home. I know you feel a kinship with West Texas, Bob, and you probably heard about this, but just in case, and this needs to be shared with the rest of the Horn Family Commune congregation, Texas has passed a bill, a law, saying that there will be no regulation about hazardous substances. This is after the fertilizer ammonium nitrate factory in West Texas exploded, killing a number of people and ruining their educational infrastructure. I will never forget seeing what looked to be a beautiful brand-new high school with chain-link fencing around it and knowing that it's ruined. It's unsafe. It's full of ultra-fine particulate matter, among other things. In fact," Dr. Allen continues, "Greg Abbott apparently issued a ruling that companies can now keep secret the hazardous substances they store." That's true. In Texas, forget about it. Would you like to know if maybe somebody's got a big old tank full of methyl chlorohexane methanol? Too bad. Pound sand. You can't. You want to know what's in fracking fluid that's being injected into the ground under your home? Shut up. I'm not going to have any job-killing regulations. We'd prefer in Texas to have people-killing deregulation. Dr. Allen notes, so that's Texas's response to West insanity, right? He says, Texas is such a wasteland, but I have lived here all my life. My practice is here. And I guess the state needs some progressives. And, well, if Wendy Davis can beat this jackass for governor, that would be fantastic. Yes, it would. And he also lets us know the Waco Friends of Peace are trucking along. He says about six of us will be at the big People's Climate March in New York City on September 21st at the UN. We're very excited about that. Maybe you'll be there. A piece of history, hopefully. And he sends us all his best wishes, and we send them back. Thank you very much, Dr. Allen. And that is up in September. I know Malloy's going to be there. And look, there's only one way for me to do this. I would not mind to be there. I'd like to be there, if nothing else, if for no other reason than to carry a banner trying to tell people about the AIC Act. But as I've told you before, the AIC Act is flat busted. And I've never done this before. If you would like for me to be there to try to raise awareness of the AIC Act, well, maybe we can work toward raising those funds outside of what we have to raise for the horn. And that's September. So give me your thoughts on that. But it would be good to be there. It'd be good to be there and maybe work a little with Malloy and see Dr. Allen. And yeah. Hey, who are all those people? Yeah, that would be really nice. I want to send out thanks to Terry. Thank you very much, Terry. That ain't no pittance. Terry just took us down to only $145 to go. That's a big deal. It's all a big deal. And Kathleen just took us down to $135 to go. So we got 50 minutes to get $135 down the road. And anybody who wants to help out is way more than welcome so to do. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Are you talking to me, sir?
Hey, Bill, what's happening?
Oh, man, so much, sir. You got me going, you know, to tectonic plates. I have a variation, which, being of German-American descent, I like a Teutonic plate myself, you know, pork, sauerkraut, gravy, red cabbage, queso.
Yes, indeedy.
And
maybe a Teutonic plate of Spätzle and a little Jaeger schnitzel with some champagne mushroom sauce over it, and or how about some
you're getting into the high class stuff.
Yeah, how about some Rouladen or some Sauerbraten?
Oh, Sauerbraten, yes, that's as I say, my mother passed that along to my mother. I was a good maker of, I was making potato pancakes up until about a year ago, and then when the guys helped me move, and they threw out so much stuff, which is, no wonder I haven't murdered them for their kindness, you know. I passed up a trip last night on a boat ride from the Balloon Society. Bob, how many times can you stand there and talk to people, and they say, well, Bill, you're looking pretty good, how do you feel? You gotta run through that routine, come on, get out of here.
Ah, but you know, that's what people say when they revere you, Bill. Gotta have a little grace, man. A little grace.
Yeah, well, that's true, but it's just, that damn boat gets hot, too, at night. Well, it was last year, and then, there was a debate as whether how far I had to walk to get to the damn thing, and, the president of our Balloon Society here, the ex-president, he's the guy. If you ever listen to an Indians game,
it's been a very long time.
Well, it's a guy that sits out there and beats the bass drum, and that's this guy. And he has the same name as the president. He's a great guy. We got on the phone. We talked. we talked baseball for like 2 hours, you know, that's, that's the old man's game, you know, baseball. But yeah, I just, you mentioned Tagalog, that's the language of the Philippines, right?
Correct.
Yeah, because I've, you know, when you read about the World War II thing, you know, and I'm working a book for the second or third time real quick of, written by this Max Hastings. It's called Armageddon. It's the last year of the war in Europe, of the Second War. And my God, as much as evil as the son of a, as Stalin was, his people really carried the ball.
Sure.
You know, they really were. They provided the manpower that beat Hitler. Because Americans and British and Poles and the free French eventually, they all did their part too, but the Russians were really the heavy water carriers of that situation.
Hey, Bill, I've got a current events question for you coming from Kathy in the chat room. She wants to know your thoughts on the return of LeBron to Cleveland.
It's all about the money, Bob. And it's not going to hurt. Believe me, I think I went to see a game years ago when I first came to Cleveland, and Bill, what the hell was his name, was coaching. And the team was, has been so, this team did not, well, the 75 team played well again, played up against the Celtics in the playoffs. But until LeBron James came here to play, this team was not strong enough to do anything. And,
I'll say this much. I've got more faith in LeBron elevating the game of the Cavs than I do of that punk-ass kid from Texas A&M elevating the game of the Browns.
Well, I'm not sold on him. I'll throw on sports talk just to hear something different. But I'll tell you what about these sports talkers. I don't think most of them know their head from other parts of their anatomy.
Or from a cabbage, maybe.
They don't have a history of the sport, you know, because you can't talk to me about pro football in Cleveland and not talk about Paul Brown and Jim Brown and Otto and Frank Ryan and
Yeah, but see, that's living in the past. And
when they used to win, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it reminds me of that coloring book I told you that was being given away up there where you are, the guy sitting on the couch wearing the orange jersey with the brown numbers, and the title of the coloring book was "Why Does Daddy Cry on Sundays?"
Yeah, well, because I was lucky. I remember going to a department store that had Chuck Noll as a guy to hang out and talk to people, and he was quite the guy. He knew his business, that's for sure. And he was a messenger guy from Paul. You know, Paul would send plays in constantly. Graham didn't hardly call his own plays. Brown would send it in from the sidelines, and Noll was one of the guys carrying plays in.
Yeah.
And it stuck. And Noll knew how to draft players. My God, look at the people he... I mean, well, I know he wasn't more than 13 or something the first year, but, you know.
Consider this, because I was actually talking with Dr. Bill about this earlier today before his program started. So the deal with LeBron is what, $22 million a year for 2 years?
Yeah.
Okay. You want to put all this in perspective? People go, well, that's a ridiculously high amount of money to be playing a basketball player. LeBron James is $28 million a year behind Rush Limbaugh.
Exactly. And the young man to me, but he's not that young anymore, but he's got a great amount of talent. And when he first played here, I listened to some of those games, and they didn't have anybody. I think the best guy they had playing around him was Carlos Boozer. That was a great name for a musician, Boozer.
LeBron is far from the end of his career. You can argue that he is in the prime of his career. And this is not
theoretically, yes.
Yeah, this is not like some guy returning home so that he can retire in his original jersey for Hall of Fame purposes.
Yep.
This is pretty surprising. I mean, I'll be the first one to admit I was surprised by it. I thought he was just going to use it to leverage a little bit more money out of Pat Riley down in Miami.
Yeah, well, maybe he looks at Pat Riley and doesn't think he'd get along with him too well.
He's gotten along well enough, but maybe the other part of it is maybe LeBron is tired of South Florida. The man is no dummy. Maybe he knows that South Florida is already having problems. You know, there are significant flooding problems already in South Florida.
Yeah.
And you know who wants to play basketball in 2 inches of water?
Sure, it's hard enough to play it dry floor, you know. But it's never been my game because I couldn't. I throw basketball. I couldn't hit the broadside of my grandmother, we used to say, you know. And if you're not tall and you're not a good shot, you stayed away from the game because you got nothing but humble. You know, that's what you used to say. You guys are humble, you man. That's when you're off the court. And it was fun. I mean, but baseball was the sport for me and a lot of. My God,
Indians I admit I haven't been following. The Indians doing anything this year?
Not much. They're around 500, but, as I say, I was age 5 and my mother took me down to downtown Cleveland and I watched the 48 team parade pass, the last world championship they had. And I gave up on the Indians in 54 when the Giants took them out in 4 straight. Have you ever seen photos of the Willie Mays catch on Dick Wirtz?
Sure, yeah.
Oh, Jesus. And that's another book that I'd recommend to any baseball fan. The title is Only the Ball Was White. And it's a study of the black major leagues, you know, the old leagues. And some of the men that were playing it, and these guys wouldn't bring them into the major leagues. These men with superb ability.
Yeah.
What's that you paying for, guys?
Cleveland, it turns out, is playing exactly 500 ball right now. They've got an overall of 47-47, but you know what? At least you're not the Cubs. Yeah, remember, the Cubs are mathematically eliminated 15 minutes before the beginning of opening day every season, and they are playing. They're playing 426 ball at 40-54, and they are. I'm trying to figure out how many games back are they? Oh, they're 12 games back of the Brewers.
When was the last time the Cubs were in a World Series? 20?
1938.
38, huh? Okay.
Didn't Babe Ruth make his famous called shot against the Cubbies?
Yeah, that was played against the Cubs, yeah. You know, baseball was such a sport when I was a kid. Every book I had on sports was about baseball. I mean, there was a series of things called the Real Books. And they pointed out in that book why did you have a left-handed first baseman, left-handed hitting, because of the positioning on the field, and how many, do you ever see a left-handed catcher in the majors? Like a guy that threw left?
No.
I don't think so, no. And, Cleveland was a funny town. I know Frank Robinson when he was hired here, and, Boudreaux. In fact, the Indians won 2 championships, 20 and 48. In both years, they won. The manager in 20 was Trish Speaker, center fielder, and player-manager, and Boudreaux was player-manager in 48. Twice they won the series, and twice they had that little, you know, that's something you don't see that often anymore, a player-manager.
No, that's...
And Mel Harder, and guys that... Harder had to handle a terrible pitching staff. How about Lemon, Wynn, Feller, a young Herb Score? I was listening to the game against the Yankees in 57 when McDougal rattled the ball off the Score's head. I was a young kid then. They were a ball fan. It was something to be. But the whole thing is, and people say, well, they're making too much money. Well, hell. I thought the real good story was Satchel Paige and Dizzy Dean putting together a team off-season and barnstorming all over the country. you know, all over the farmlands and lots to play because they were so underpaid, Bob.
Well, all that goes back to Curt Flood, of course, and finally breaking the reserve clause. Frankly, anytime I hear someone complaining about player salaries, okay, yeah, $22 million. Anytime I hear somebody complaining about player salaries, I always notice that they never complain about the money the owners make.
Yeah.
For instance, Donald Sterling out there with the Clippers. The guy purchased a terrible, terrible, terrible basketball team for chump change, and he's going to laugh all the way to the bank, having made billions out of it. Now, I don't care. I don't care if your stock is in Apple because Apple just had, for instance, a 7-for-1 stock split. Man, wouldn't you love to have been in on that? No, I wouldn't have. The market is a filthy, filthy place. But anyway, I don't care if you're invested in Apple. You're not bringing back that kind of return on investment that Donald Sterling got on the Clippers, okay? But very few people bitch about how much the owners make, you know, the fact that whether it be the commissioner's office of the NBA or the NFL or Major League Baseball, those are all, and you gotta just take a minute and let it rattle around, Bill. Those are all non-profit organizations. The NFL alone is worth billions.
Yes.
And they pay.
Wait.
They pay not a penny on it, Bill. Not a penny in taxes. In other words, the NFL is stealing from the commons of the United States via welfare. You know, tax-exempt status is reserved or should be reserved for small organizations that can't afford taxes in the first place and are performing a manifest public good and are not operating for purposes of making money. Now, you cannot answer that question in the affirmative with any of the sports leagues in any way. They're not operating for the public good. They're operating for their own pockets. They're not small. They're not unable to pay taxes. And they're certainly not deserving of the welfare of this country. How hard is as compared to, LeBron's going to make $22 million a year. How hard is it, apparently damn near impossibly difficult, to get America to look at the other side of that coin and say, well, that damn NBA is making a bajillion dollars a year. Or, with the example I used a few minutes ago, Rush Limbaugh, $50, $55 million a year. And nobody says, well, how in the world is he worth $55 million a year? How much OxyContin does one man need?
You know, Bob, the American Football League, without the TV, the influx of TV money into the game of pro football was a big changer. The NFL probably wouldn't have survived without television money. Because it was the All-American Football Conference, which was playing in the 40s, TV, forget it, you know? TV money is what made professional football. Well, those are the 1958 title game, the overtime game, Baltimore, Allen Amici scored the winning touchdown, Baltimore, New York. The Browns went into the last game of the season, and all they had to do was get a tie, and they didn't play that year. But New York Giants beat them two straight games. They tied it on the last game of the season, and they had to come in and do a playoff, and New York won. The Giants won it. The Giants had two coaches who were shadowing Paul Brown for years. One was a guy who coached in Texas, Landry, and the other guy was the man who, of course, is the trophy is named after.
Sure.
The Pro Football Championship trophy. He was coaching for the Giants, and they were shadowing him because Paul was way ahead of everybody. I mean, he ran out of gas, too. Believe me, you get to a certain age. And one guy I used to talk to a lot had been Paul's equipment manager, a guy named Maury Kono. And he lived in University of Silk. When I mean, I played there so much that I played there 20 years in that neighborhood. So I knew everybody in the neighborhood and, you know, and the colleges. I hung out at the student union and played cards with a bunch of my friends who were going to school there. And these guys who were going to Case, Bob, they were sons of working guys. The ones I knew.
They were sons of... Not anymore.
Nope, not anymore. And what neighborhood that we used to call Little Italy, if somebody died in 55 and he was dropped back in the neighborhood today, he'd look around and wonder, where do all these Asian people come from? You know, the people who live down there, go to school, the doctors, the people connected with the hospitals. This neighborhood is... You know, somebody who lived there would say, I don't know, wrong place. Look at all these people from Asia. The other thing you mentioned, yeah, tag along, I think we talked about that, how you mentioned that language, and we were trying to train an army of Filipinos to stand off the Japanese, and tag along was a hard thing to work with, to try to take English words and convert them so you could get a guy to salute at the right time and all the other crap that goes with, you know, that kind of stuff. But I'll let you go, but yeah, you got it going. I mean, and sports is just, I said, I hear these sports, to, oh, 1941, Bob, two things happened in 1941 that probably will never be seen maybe again. Joe DiMaggio came in at Cleveland hitting 56 straight games. And they shut him down here in Cleveland.
Yep.
End of the streak.
And wasn't 1941 also Ted Williams batting 406?
Yes, sir. That was the last two things. Baseball is a... Well, the thing I've heard about baseball was the statistics. The statistical side of the game was a real important thing. You know, the ERA and... I saw a fella pitch his last no-hitter in 52. I just happened to turn a game on the old black and white TV, and he was pitching against Detroit, and I believe it was 52, and that was his third no-hitter. And Bob gave up 3 years of his life on a battleship in the Pacific, I believe. Because otherwise, he only won 264 or 266, but he spent 3 years away from the diamond, or he would have won 300, which is another thing.
Yeah, the same thing can be said of Ted Williams. He went off and did combat duty not once, but twice.
Yeah, when they called him back for Korea, how insane were these people? And the American guys that were in occupation duty in Japan left. Can you imagine how tough a duty that was? Pocket full of American money in a poor country from 45 to the outbreak of the Korean War. Now they shipped these guys to Korea, and they found out these North Koreans were pretty tough hombres. And when they finally kicked their butts, in came the Mao's, the Chinese armies, and they were... Well, hell, it's China. A lot of the Chinese armament the Chinese communists were using, you know where they got it, don't you?
Sure. Yeah.
Chiang Kai-shek's people.
Yeah. The folks who dropped them on the fly.
Yeah, we spent... George Marshall went there to try to mediate the Chinese Civil War, and he came home just shrugging his shoulders. And Marshall was... He said stupid things and did stupid things by our standards. Like the idea of using the atomic bomb on an island and the Americans marching over the area where the bomb had been dropped. I don't think so, Bob. You?
Yeah.
I don't think that would be real healthy. But they didn't know any better. It's amazing sometimes what people don't seem to really know. There's a lot of controversy. I'm sure you're familiar with a lot of the controversy about the men who developed the atomic bomb and some of the feelings they had after it was used and after they had, you know, because they had been involved in developing the damn thing. And some of them were pretty sorry about it, with good reason. Anyway, I'll let you go, my friend.
All right, you have a good evening. We'll talk soon,
you
Bill.
Too.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Our buddy Bill calling from Cleveland. Mr. Stress, legendary bluesman that he is. 27 minutes before the hour. And, yes, we remain at $135 to go to close off fundraising for this evening. I guess I have to say this stuff or it doesn't happen. I wish I didn't, but I do. So 14 people at $10 a piece, two at 70, four at 35, and that's as far as the math goes for me. Everything else I have to have a calculator. The lines are open. We have about 24, 23 minutes of conversation left in the program. If you want to jump in, area code 304-574-8178. It says it's Todd and Kathy. Hey, guys.
Hi.
Hey, Kathy, it's you.
It's me. How are you?
I'm well, providing a little feminine balance to the conversation.
Just a tad.
We'll take all we can get.
Okay. I wanted to know what Bill thought about LeBron because we have a little controversy here at home.
There's not domestic in harmony, is there?
No.
Discord?
No. I always see things of like a glass half full. And Todd says he sees a glass half empty. So we have that differencing of opinion sometimes.
I understand.
Yeah. He's still mad at him, so.
Well, and there's a good bit of that up there, isn't there?
Well, a little. Not too much. It's so good for the city, it's kind of hard.
Well, it's going to bring a tremendous load of media exposure back.
And they say $500 million. What did you tell me, Todd? Yeah, for him coming back, you know, to the city.
And like so. I said, it provides an appropriate balance to the horrible news that the Republican National Convention is going to come calling to you guys in the summer of 2016. I'd be calling out the reserve vice squad if I was the mayor of Cleveland.
Yeah, I'm thinking though that they're going to see a lot of protest. I'm not sure the RNC understands Ohio or Cleveland, Northeast Ohio, that well. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
It's not exactly a Republican stronghold, is it?
Absolutely not. Not at all.
But see, that's why they're doing it. They think that by being in a place like Cleveland, that somehow that will influence Ohio to go Republican. I mean, that's the obvious thinking, isn't it?
It is, I'm sure. I would think so, but I just think they picked the wrong city. I really do.
Well, that's because you like Cleveland.
I know. I know. I mean, if I'm going to look at it.
I mean, if it was up to me, the Republican National Convention would be held at Chernobyl.
Yeah, I agree.
Or maybe Fukushima.
That would work. They're mean people.
Right, and we've all seen the bumper sticker, haven't we? You know, mean people suck.
Yeah, so I'm not thrilled, but it will bring money to the town, and it will showcase Cleveland. See, we call it a town here, but it will showcase it to the national eye, which is good for the city. But I don't know.
And the bars and strip joints will have overflow crowds when the Republicans get there.
Oh, absolutely! And we do have great food in Cleveland.
Yes, you do.
Great
food.
What's
that farmer's market?
The West Side Market.
Yeah, I was there once and didn't have near enough money in my pocket. Could have gone crazy.
Yeah, it's nice. I miss it. We used to live really close to it, and we're not.
Slimans will have to be working double shifts just to keep up.
Yes. Slimans is great. They're known for their, Bob, help me out.
Corned beef,
thank you.
Those wafer-thin slices of rye bread and mustard, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
But for anybody who's never seen a Cleveland-style corned beef sandwich, the damn things are 6 inches thick.
And they are. But you can't, you have to use a knife and a fork to eat them.
Oh, I didn't. I'm a heathen.
I guess.
You know, I've got one of those hinged jaws like a boa constrictor, and it just, you know,
Yeah, they're good. I used to work in downtown Cleveland, actually for the power company, but we'd go down there, of course, around St. Paddy's Day and get sandwiches from down there. But there's wonderful places all about Cleveland to eat. So,
well,
so
Bill was talking about that neck of the woods that he used to run around in, Little Italy and stuff. Mm-hmm. I was up in there. See, my experience with Cleveland is largely centered on a series of visits up to Cleveland Clinic with my father, who got got a sure thing 10 years added to his life because we went up there instead of treating his blockages down here.
Mm-hmm.
And in the meantime, we maybe it seems a little bit incongruous, but we would get there a day or two ahead of his appointments, or he'd have some blood work to be drawn or whatever, and we would try to eat our way through, you know, that segment of the town.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, that's how I learned about Slimans, and there was a, as you went up the road past Case Western, I remember there was a little Mexican place, and it wasn't anything special, but they brought this, and I asked them how they did it, and they kindly told me, and I came home and reproduced it here. They brought this bowl of freshly pickled vegetables out as an appetizer,
mm-hmm,
along with the chips,
mm-hmm,
and it was so spicy it would peel paint off walls,
mm-hmm,
and it was delicious. And the more you ate of that stuff, your only recourse was to pound down an ice cold beer.
Yeah.
Oh, and it was good. And yeah, went on up into Little Italy one time and tried a couple of places up there. And, you know, it's not all just Italian joints up there anymore.
No, uh-uh.
And I think I had some awesome Thai food or something. And then there was the evening, a buddy and I went downtown to some steak joint that served this giant freaking ribeye with the bone still on it.
Ruth Chris?
No. This was local. This wasn't a chain.
Local?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What?
No idea.
I don't know. Yeah.
It was over there. Not too. Where's what's that bar district down there by the
John Q's?
Maybe. Yeah.
John Q's is right downtown.
Yeah, that sounds right.
It's not the bar district though. Yeah, the warehouse and the flats are the.
We went to one down by the flats, and we went to John Q's in the warehouse district. The one by the flats is where I got the great big honking ribeye with the bone still on. I felt like a caveman. Just pick it up by the bone and gronk like meat.
Yeah, Cleveland's a fun place if you have any idea what to do or where to go.
And if you really dig lake effect snow.
Yeah. Although, we had a terrible winter. We're south of Cleveland now, but it was horrible. We had beautiful weather today, though. Oh, my. It's like 74 and no humidity.
It was exquisite here, too. I mean, see, what y'all get has a way of creeping down to us. Good, bad, or otherwise.
Right.
But it poured. It poured earlier today, and we badly needed it. I don't think we'd had rain here for 2.5 weeks or so, mm-hmm, which is kind of weird for a rainforest.
Well, yeah, I suppose. But it's the climate, right?
Yeah. Well, no, it's not the climate. I mean,
Well, you know, it's not a change in climate.
No. Happens all the time. Let's burn. Let's burn some more hydrocarbons, Kat.
I saw where the Australian Prime Minister, is that what they call him?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Tony Abbott.
Yes, is trying to reverse their emissions laws to be able to go hire them again. They were lower, or they had laws to lower emissions.
Yeah, this was the carbon tax.
Mm-hmm.
The carbon tax.
Right.
Yeah, I think Robert in Australia, in fact, mentioned that a couple of weeks or a couple of nights ago, maybe back around Friday or so. Abbott had promised he would get the demonic carbon tax repealed, and then three members of the Senate backed away from the deal, and so it's now a political football.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine that, a political football consisting of whether or not human beings should be able to continue to exist in Australia.
Sick.
Yeah, it is.
Sad. Well, look what they're doing to people in Detroit with the water.
Yeah, and Netroots Nation is going to be taking place there maybe in a few days.
Yes, yeah.
And I would be interested to see how much coverage comes out of that. I'll check it out. It would be nice to be there, but, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be nice to be there promoting the AIC Act, among other things.
Mm-hmm. It's just wrong. No water, polluted water. And in the case of Detroit, there's water all around them. With the Great Lakes, you know,
yeah.
I mean, it's crazy, and they're not going after the stadiums, GM, who's the other big name up there?
Ford?
Yes. I think GM had a $20 million bill, and one of those two, and they paid $4 million and are disputing the rest. The same with the city of Detroit. So $150 bills, I guess, are the problem, not...
Right, but I think the water company is going to find it rather difficult, don't you, Kath, to make up a multi-million dollar deficit on the backs of $150 overdues?
Absolutely. And the reason they want to lower their debt and bring in all this money... Although they're not going after the right people, corporations, because they're people too, right? Is to sell it to a private, private entity to run it. So then it's going to be worse because none of the profits go back to the city. So
yeah,
it's sad.
Liquidation of the commons.
I can't. It shouldn't be done. I don't know. And in Detroit, it's really hard for those people to fight. Just like in Appalachia, it's hard for people to fight. They're trying to survive.
Right. Poor folks don't have a lot of spare time or spare energy or spare capital to support a major grassroots campaign. I mean, that's why the AIC campaign is in the shape it's in.
Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile, organizations sit on tens and hundreds of millions of dollars and say, well, you know, we're not really crazy about the fact that you hillbillies went out and did something on your own. I mean, it could make a fella bitter, Kathy.
Oh, I'm sure. It would. Very bitter. Part of the problem, I mean, in groups like, I don't even know all those other names, Sierra and...
NRDC and...
Right. Should all be working as a community.
Well, yeah, and see, in the case of Sierra Club, they even commissioned and participated in a study that was published in, like, Philanthropy Magazine or something that gave them the answer. They said, take your money, pump it into the grassroots, because grassroots is who gets it done.
Mm-hmm.
And Sierra Club was like an advisor on the study, and the study came out, and they went, oh, really, that's what we're supposed to do? Get us another email out asking for people to send us $15 to save the last gray wolf, would you, Muffy?
Hmm.
And there you go. Mm-hmm. You remind me of something. I've been a poet for a very long time, and I published a poem on my Facebook page not too long back. About exactly this topic, career environmentalists in cool offices, and anybody that wants to read that and share it is certainly more than welcome. I think I posted it on Saturday. It got a couple or three dozen likes. I mean, that was nice.
Hmm. Yes.
But, you know, trying to identify the problem because, you know, I've been told so many times by the Sierra Club, you can't criticize the club, that, you know, I'm just sick of it now. I mean, I'm probably the last guy you need to tell to shut up.
Well, I think everybody should play in the same sandbox. That means you work together on issues, you know. So there's an issue over in West Virginia that needs a focus.
Well, Kat,
there's an issue in Oklahoma.
Earthquakes.
That needs a focus.
Yeah.
Obviously. You know, there's issues all over. I mean, we have to start thinking about the actual environment people are living in day to day. Not, it's gotten that needed. Yeah, it's great if we want to save wolves. I understand that you don't want your environment to take animals away either, but let's think about the people first, because if the water's poison, then it's poisoning the animals. If the air is poison, it's poisoning the animals too.
Right, and then there's there's a larger issue too, Kathy, and that is this. If you're hustling Save the Last Gray Wolf to raise funds to help pay your executive director's six-figure salary, you're not saving the last gray wolf. Okay?
No.
It's just a fact.
Right.
And secondarily, I want to be clear, these big organizations are more than happy to work with us proles. But the way it's supposed to work is the proles, the way we describe it here in Appalachia is we call it the dancing hillbilly syndrome. The smart people are supposed to tell the hillbillies when to dance. And then the hillbillies are supposed to dance and talk with our funny accents. And then they'll tell us when we're supposed to stop dancing and shut up. And our job then is to stop dancing and shut up. And that's what constitutes working with them. If we get all uppity and start having ideas, they get very upset very quickly.
Right. Which is wrong.
Yeah.
Makes no sense.
And it does not contribute to solving any problems.
Right. I have a question for you.
Absolutely.
And it was about the conversation yesterday regarding the candidates for Senate
mm-hmm.
in Virginia. Could a candidate win if they ran on things like the AIC Act, ending mountaintop removal, finding new, what's the word I want, economies for people to work in,
mm-hmm.
all of that, you know, what we think of to solve the problem, right? Would someone running for Senate in West Virginia be able to run on that type of progressive platform and win?
The short answer, Kathy, is I don't know.
Okay.
And the reason I don't know is because no one has tried it.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, the Green, the people associated with the Green Party in West Virginia, the Mountain Party.
Right.
To the best of my understanding, now maybe I missed it, but I was told they made a conscious decision not to run anybody on the Mountain Party ticket for Senate in the race between Moore Capito and Natalie Tennant. Because they didn't want to take votes away from Natalie Tennant, because Moore Capito is so absolutely, utterly odious.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, and I don't know if the Mountain Party knew this or not, unfortunately, Natalie Tennant is following the conventional wisdom, which turns out to be only conventional and not wisdom, that one dare not speak so much as a peep about the coal industry that is anything short of suggesting that they are the second coming of Jesus Christ with soot on his face. And so we can't know. And yet we do know there is polling data done by both Democratic and Republican firms that shows the opposition to mountaintop removal in West Virginia is upwards of 60%. But no one is willing to make that attempt. Now, there's a touch of that in another race. I've had Ed Rabel, who I consider to be a friend and a man whom I deeply respect, on this program. He is running as an independent in the 2nd Congressional District race against a guy named Nick Casey, who every time Joe Manchin yawns, you can see Nick Casey's smiling face at the back of his throat. He's so far up Joe Manchin's rear end. The other guy running is a carpetbagger from Maryland who's married to a surgeon in Maryland and wants to tell West Virginians that, by God, they're not free if they're going to the doctor when they're sick. And Ed Rabel is running against those two. But he's an independent. And because at the end of the day, Kathy, what controls politics here as well as anywhere else in the United States is?
Money.
There you go. And so, you know, there's Ed out there knocking on doors and being earnest and talking about reality, but he doesn't have enough filthy money to run ads saying, Ed Rabel wants to know when Nick Casey stopped having sex with farm animals. West Virginia values don't include having sex with farm animals, and Ed Rabel wants to know when Nick Casey stopped. He doesn't have, because and you see it, you know, you're in a vicious political market too.
Mm-hmm.
Consider the hateful, and they are. They don't inform anyone of anything. It is just snide, vicious, personal attack, hate.
Mm-hmm.
And most Americans are so glad when elections are over, not because the issues have been decided, but because the filthy ads are out of their lives for a little while, maybe.
Yeah.
So, that's both a short and a long answer to what I think is a very, very good question.
Thank you. I just wondered, I have some other, I know it's getting late, so I'll have to call in another night, but I did want to say, I'm going to take off of the microphone, Bob, so be aware that donations are so important to the Horn. I know Bob has to say it every day, but if you listen to the Horn and it means something to you, it's part of your environment, your weekly things that you do and you like and enjoy, please donate. Please. PayPal's easy if you know how to do that. There is an address. And Bob, you should give that address out because some people might not have access to a website.
That's true. PM, The Horn, Head On Radio Network. 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. And checks and money orders should not be made payable to Bob Kincaid, but to Head On Communications or The Horn or something like that, because Boss Man Wayne deals with all of the bill pay.
And he will swat the spiders away.
He will put on his spider-proof gloves and reach into the echo chamber that is our mailbox and retrieve anything that arrives there.
Yes. And the other thing I wanted to say is I know that people have busy lives and we forget, or we're listening to the program while we're cooking dinner or trying to get laundry done or whatever. And you can also just do a monthly that continues, a PayPal donation.
That's true. There's a subscription function.
Absolutely.
And that's really helpful.
And I use that because I know I've budgeted. It's not a large amount. It's a small amount. But it's budgeted. And it goes to the Horn every month. And then when I can, we send extra. So it's just a thought. I know lives get busy. And it's an easy way to make sure, if you want to donate and keep the Horn going, to do it.
Thank you, Kathy. So thank you very, very much. I do appreciate it.
Thank you.
I think people understand the gravity of it more when it's not me talking about it and it's other people. I think it carries more weight.
It's important. I mean, that's how this program goes on. The only way is by all of us who listen. And if you just listen, that's participating. So And there's other ways to participate. The chat room's great. The people are friendly, warm, they care about people calling in, obviously. And your tweets and Facebook and emails to Bob.
And they are all welcome, one and all. Kathy, so thank you so much. And you and Todd have a wonderful evening.
You too.
All right. Bye now.
Thank you. Bye.
And that is Kathy from Ohio. Time to get out of here. And I want to make sure that I thank Robert. Thank you, Robert, very kindly for taking us down to $115 to go for fundraising this evening. I doubt if we could make that up in the next minute and a half, but maybe between now and tomorrow night's program, you think that's possible? Because otherwise we're going to have a $265 hole to fill for prayer meeting Wednesday. And I don't know if the plate will hold that when the deacons pass it. Good news. Thank you, Thomas. Thank you very much. We are now down to only $85 to go. Thanks very kindly. Thank you, one and all, in all the ways of participating that Kathy mentioned. Thank you, one and all, our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACACT. .org, ACHEACT.ORG. And always, 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 Gina.